Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. I'm Ryan and I'm thrilled to share with you this interview that I recorded with Genevieve Gornacek. If you loved The Witch's Heart, I'm delighted to tell you that you will also love Genevieve's new novel, The Weaver and the Witch Queen. This book is gorgeous and thoughtful and full of adventure and love and sisterhood and witches and magic and betrayal and wow, I loved it so much. I had such a great time chatting with Genevieve Gornacek, so let's just jump into it.
Hi, Genevieve Gornacek, how are you?
I'm doing well, how are you?
So good! I love
so much.
Thank you so much.
We have already spoken about this off mic, but I have been utterly consumed by this book all week. I have been devouring it in all of its forms, and I am obsessed. I love it so much.
Thank you so much.
It's incredible. I was a huge fan of The Witch's Heart, and mm-hmm. I am delighted to say I think I love this one even more.
Oh, thank you.
It's like, it's so good.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me to hear because I wrote The Witch's Heart so long ago. Mm-hmm. So I was like, can I even do this again? Like, I don't know. Like, how do I book? How does book? So yeah, no, that means a lot because that means that, you know, I have developed as a writer, which is the hope, right? Like you would hope that I wouldn't be writing the same book in 2011 when I wrote The Witch's Heart than I do now. So
yeah, no, it's incredible. Happy book birthday. We are recording this on Pub Day.
Yes.
How are you doing? How's it been?
I'm a little bit overwhelmed, but everything's been really good so far. So awesome. Yeah.
Well, that is wonderful to hear. For the listeners who haven't gotten a chance to read it yet, could you tell us a little bit about The Weaver and the Witch Queen?
Yes. The Weaver and the Witch Queen is a fantastical reimagining of the origin story of Gunhild, Mother of Kings, who was a queen of Norway in the early 10th century. So during the Viking Age, it's about basically the book stops and no spoilers, but it stops like right before one of the inciting kind of incidents in her life, according to the sources. Mm. So it's really pretty much how she gets there. Mm. And she is a figure who we think existed, you know, she's quasi-historical, but in a lot of the sources, she is vilified, mostly because she does villainous things. So this book isn't necessarily meant to be like the rehabilitation of Gunhild, Mother of Kings. Mm-hmm. It's more meant as like a, I bet you're wondering how we got here. But
record scratch.
Yes, exactly. But that would be more like later in her life when she does mm-hmm. all the interesting things, like record scratch. Back in the day, like, This is how I got my start, which like, and that's the whole reason the book originally had like an epilogue that went into like some of the things that she and some of the other historical characters do in their lives. Mm. And I ended up actually cutting that mm-hmm. because I am holding out for my publisher to want a sequel. So like if I put an epilogue that says what she does with the rest of her life, that's not going to be mm-hmm. a thing.
Right.
So I personally don't think that the book suffers for the lack of epilogue, mm-hmm. but I'm really just keeping my fingers crossed that I get to visit this world again because it was a lot of fun to write,
and even though it's hard. A lot of fun to read.
Thank you.
I adore this book. Some of my notes are so funny from like the beginning where I'm like, oh, she's so funny. Like she's so fierce.
Thank you. Yeah. She's so sassy.
Oh, she's so sassy. I love a character who can like verbally spar and just like she's got it. I love her. I love all the characters in this book. Oh my God.
Thanks.
Your books. I know we talked last time when we chatted about Witch's Heart mm-hmm. about the research that you did for that one. What did that look like for this one?
Right. So for this, oh my gosh, so different. And honestly, I really should have re-listened to our last episode to see like how much I said then because I don't remember what I said. I have a goldfish memory. I literally
so do I.
I have a stack of sequels to books that I read like years ago that I just haven't read the sequels because I don't remember anything about the first book. And like some of these are books that my friends wrote. So I'm like, oh, I'm a bad friend. Like I'm a bad colleague. So the process of research for The Weaver and the Witch Queen, so much of it, similar to The Witch's Heart, was like being like, okay, I know this fact. How do I know this fact? Right?
Yeah.
Like, Vikings are like super in right now. And whenever something gets like super popular, you have all these people thinking that they know something about this subject and just like, you know, projecting onto TikTok, like these random facts that have no basis in reality. And then everybody in the comments is like, oh my gosh, I never knew this about Vikings. It's like, no, stop. There is not, we cannot corroborate this with any source, archaeological or literary. Like, please stop this. But like for me, that meant a lot of me going like, I know this. But like, where did this piece of information come from? Because I've been in it. I've been in this subject since 2011, like early 2011. And so there's so much that I've just like gleaned over the years from like different sources. And so I'm like, okay, if I have to like defend this, I need to find where I found this out. So there was a lot of that and a lot of Googling things that I thought I knew and finding out that they came from memes. I shouldn't say a lot of things that I thought I knew, because like a lot of things I knew actually I could corroborate, but like there was a couple of things where I was like, wait a minute, is this fake? Like in an earlier draft of Weaver, there's a part where one of the characters like gets a stomach injury, and another character like has him drink onion broth, like, and then if they smell, and then if they could smell the onion, that means he has a punctured bowel. Like, sorry to get like gross on Maine, but I was like, is this really a thing, or did I just see this somewhere and like absorb it? And it turns out it is actually from a saga. However, the meme in which it says like it's like a screen cap from Tumblr, and it's like Vikings let women handle the money because they thought math was witchcraft. I am sorry to say that I could not find a single source on that. Like I was mad, but I was like, I think this is a thing, right? I think that came from though, like the modern Icelandic word for computer basically means number witch. So like, I think that might be like one of the sources of maybe that meme, but like women definitely did like handle the inventory and stuff, but I don't think they thought that math was witchcraft. I don't think that was a thing. I wish I could corroborate that, because that would be a super cool fun fact, but I don't know where it came from.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's so funny when things like that happen, because I remember talking to Alex Harrow about when she wrote, oh my gosh, and the title's gone, but her feminist witchy book. And she wrote that the dresses had pockets, and that's where they kept the things that made their spells. And so she like in the thing was like, and so they're trying to get rid of the pockets because, you know, witchcraft. And everyone took that as fact. And she was like, y'all, I made that up. Like, you can't.
No,
I made that up.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's, I actually, it's so funny. I've had people like try to say that like the witch's heart was canon, like for Norse mythology, and which is immensely flattering, like immensely flattering, but I'm like, no, like I tried to be super straightforward in the appendix of like, here is where I got everything, like here's what the sources say about this character and this character and this carrier. Everything else is just me making stuff up. Like, please don't take the witch's heart as like, this is Norse mythology. It is definitely not. It is just like adjacent.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to rewrite anything.
Yeah, it's like fan fiction within the world.
Yes, yes.
Like we're just playing. We're playing in space.
Yeah.
No, I love it. And it's so funny, as someone who's like not very familiar with like the myths and the sagas and things like that. Yeah. I read it and I'm like, maybe.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
But I'm also not going to quote it as fact, because it's a novel.
Right.
No, but I love it. I love the I love the theme of like sisterhood and friendship throughout this novel, between the sort of, you've got obviously Odny and Gunnar, but also Signy off to the side having been stolen away.
Oh my gosh.
We're going to save her. And so just like all these different bonds and the way they manifest differently. I love the theme of sisterhood and friendship in this novel.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful. All right, let's talk about Gunhild. Yes. I love her. Where did you find her voice? Obviously you did kind of the research about her, but like her sassiness, her being painted as a villain in history, where did you like find the seed of her kind of prequel, I guess?
Just like in the stories about her, there's the most kind of extensive one. She shows up. So my two main sources for this book were Heimskringla, which is by an Icelander named Snorri Sturluson. Sorry, I had to like stop and be like, talk more slowly, please. And so he wrote a bunch of sagas of the Norwegian kings, and they're compiled as Heimskringla. And then Eylsaga, which was written by an anonymous author that we think might have also been Snorri Sturluson, but we're not sure. And because all the sagas are anonymous, mostly. Sure. But in Eylsaga, Eylsaga Grimson is the main character. He is the younger brother of Thorolf, who is a character in The Weaver and the Witch Queen. And Eyl becomes Gunhild's lifelong arch nemesis. She is the villain in that story. And Eyl does a lot of questionable things himself. Like, it's very, the sagas are very morally gray in a lot of ways. They say like, this is the way it was because honor and blah, blah, blah. But like, to our modern eyes, it's like, ooh, like, you really going to kill that guy for honor? I don't know about that. Like, maybe not a good idea. But Gunhild and Eyl saga, like, just kind of like, leaps off the page. Like, she's constantly mentioned as being like conniving, and like everybody knew about Gunhild's scheming, and then they had to stay out of Norway because she was going to send people after them to kill them. So like, because that's what she does. Like, so I just took all these incidents from her life and just, I'm like, okay, like, how could this woman have started out? And as it's mentioned in like one of my favorite textbooks about the Viking Age, it's called Valkyrie, the Women of the Viking World. It's mentioned by the author that like Gunhild herself like is not necessarily a successful figure. She loses. Like, she doesn't always win. And I thought that she should be allowed to fail and to not always win. And I also didn't want to like rehabilitate her either. I didn't want to be like, actually, she was only mean because everyone was mean to her first, and then she just became mean. Like, I don't subscribe to that. Like, she's, if I get to continue writing about her, she is going to do all the bad things she does. But just like taking all of that and being like, okay, but how did she start off? Who is this woman?
Oh yeah. No, I love an origin story, but you're right. I get really frustrated when it's like, no, they were good actually. And it's like, well,
yeah, no,
no, they no. weren't. Yeah, I remember when the like Cruella movie came out, which I did not see, but I was like, hold on. You are going to try to make me sympathize with the woman who skinned puppies? No.
Right.
That's not remember. How we do villain origin stories.
I remember the discourse. I remember the discourse around that. And that was wild.
It was insane. Whereas this, you can like see it, but she also does have the moments of like, oh, that was a strong reaction. Okay.
Yes. It's like, did we really need to go? Like, she just escalates things. Like, it's just, she goes from 0 to 100. And it's like, girl, like, you need to take a chill pill. And like, just love her so much. She's such a mess.
So much.
And I think she should be allowed to be a mess.
Absolutely. Like,
just let her go.
She's such a mood. There were so many times when I was reading her, I was like, wow, what a mood.
Yes. Like, there was literally a point in Heimskringla, like, where, okay, there's like 1,000 king somethings, like, while I was reading these sagas, like, everybody's a king. And so like the part in Weaver, and this isn't a spoiler, but she like says to she looks at Eric and goes, I think the name king or the word king is used entirely too loosely in this country. And I was like, that was me reading Heimskringla. Like, that was my mood. I was just like, why is everybody a king? Like, why can't these guys be princes? Like, the sons, why can't they be princes? But whatever. It's fine.
I laughed so hard at that. I was like, yes, absolutely.
That whole scene is one of my favorite scenes in the entire book, where they're just walking down to the dock and they're just talking, and Eric's just like, I can't with you. Like, behave yourself when we meet my father, please. Also, what are you wearing?
Why are there ducks on your dress? What's happening?
That is historical. I could say that is historical.
It's incredible.
Yes,
it's incredible.
There was a piece of duck pattern silk found in the Oseberg burial, which would have predated this book by about 100 years. So that's why it's kind of like described as being like something that came to Gunhild that was like an heirloom.
Yeah.
So because it's old. It's much older than the book would have been. So
yeah. No, I love that. I also love there's a scene early-ish on where she confronts her very toxic narcissistic mother.
That was so hard to write.
I was gonna ask about that because as someone who has been, you know, raised in a similar household and has had confrontations and ultimately gone no contact with certain people, I was like, oh, this scene feels real.
that was really hard because I knew originally in the original, like earlier drafts of the book, like her mom dies before they can have that confrontation. Sure. And I just felt that it needed to happen. Like Gunhild needed to have the last word in that conversation because I'm not going to spoil the ending for you because I know you're not done yet, but like one of the really like big themes that I was working with in the book is this idea that like, we don't have to keep people in our lives that are not serving us, that we can't serve, that just the relationship is not working out no matter how much you love this person or don't.
Right.
You know, sometimes you just have to walk away from this relationship. And Gunhild and her mom, like that's a big one. Like, you know, especially like beforehand, her friends and being like, I think it was Audney specifically being like, you're not going to get any satisfaction from this.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And Gunhild's like,
have to do this.
Right. Like you're confronting her is not going to bring you any closure. It's just going to make things worse for you mentally. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, she was right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That scene was great.
Yeah. Thank you.
So we've gushed about our Gunna. Which character was your favorite to write? And was there one that was like really hard to write?
I would say that like all of them. In terms of main characters, I really, really loved writing Gunhild, obviously.
Yeah.
Just because she's so sharp and so fast and so like haughty and proud and like, you know, I got this. She don't got it. Very much not. I loved writing her relationship with Eric. I loved my favorite side character was Arinbjorn, like 100%. Eric's foster brother. In the stories, like especially in Eil Saga, he is like the mediator in so many of these situations that the characters find themselves in. And so I was like, what if I reimagine him as this like funny little guy who everybody likes, but who can be serious when it's time to be serious. And when he is serious, it's kind of terrifying. You haven't got to that part yet, I don't think. But like,
I don't think so. Yeah.
When he gets serious, it's like, oh boy. Now we're in trouble. Arnbjorn's got his weapons out, but like he was a blast. Audney was kind of hard for me sometimes because she is so similar to me, so it was hard not to put too much of myself on the page. Like, because when you put too much of yourself on the page, like I think you have to strike a balance between like putting enough that people know that you're being sincere, you're being genuine, and can connect with it. But like, if you make it too personal to yourself, then any little criticism that finds its way to you starts to feel very personal. So just like keeping Audney like at a safe distance, but also like within a range of me, like being able to write about someone like her authentically, someone like me authentically, but without making it like this is me in the Viking age. Like,
yeah. Ooh, yeah. That would be a challenge.
Of, like, yeah.
Keeping that at arm's length, but also like close enough to make her feel real, which she does. She does.
Thank
feel.
You.
All of the characters are so like, one thing I love is that all of the characters feel very distinct. Like I can absolutely like, I know who's who, you know what I mean?
Like,
and which often I can find in books that have like a big cast, I can get kind of confused and like, wait, who's talking? Who's this person related to? Why?
Right.
Who are they? And I feel in this book, I'm like, nope, I know exactly who this is. Like,
thank
I know
you.
Exactly their like alliances and who said.
there are a lot of big personalities in this book. Like I enjoyed all of them.
Yeah.
And if I may do a quick aside about Arnbjorn, really quick. One of the incidents from Eil Saga that really informed the way that I wrote Erik, Gunhild, and Arnbjorn is later on, and this okay, this isn't a spoiler, this is history, Erik and Gunnhild like end up ruling in York, England, which at the time was Jorvik. And they at this point are already like very much enemies with Eyjolskald Grimsson, the title character of the saga. So when Eyjol finds himself shipwrecked on the shores of York and has to go to the nearest place for aid, Erik and Gunnhild end up being the rulers of that place. And when they were kicked out of Norway, doesn't happen in the Weaver and the Witch Queen, it happens later. So no spoilers, but history. Arnbjorn went with him. He was one of the like nobles who gave up his land to follow them when they left the country. And Arnbjorn is friends with Eyjol. Like they had their foster fathers. No, their fathers were foster brothers. So he has a kinship tie.
Yep. Yep.
Arnbjorn, as the mediator, he has a kinship tie both to Erik and to Eyjol. So Eyjol shows up and Eric's like, "Hi, I'm going to kill you." And Gunnhild's like, "Yes, you better kill this guy. He is our mortal enemy." And Arnbjorn somehow manages to talk his way into like getting Erik to agree to have Eyjol compose a poem like in praise of him in order to save his head. So that was a compromise. You come up with a good enough poem, a praise poem, because poems are like currency and Eyjol is a poet. So Eric's like, "Fine." And Gunnhild is like, "Oh my God, I swear to kill this guy. Like, what are you doing?" So Eyjol goes and he's trying to concentrate on like composing this poem for his worst enemy, right? Like he's like having a really hard time, and he's having an even harder time because there is a swallow at the window who is just tittering and like poking and prodding and just making a lot of noise and being very, very distracting.
Oh my God.
Arnbjorn comes along. He's like, "How's it going, Eyjol?" And Eyjol's like, "Terrible, because there's this bird who like will not leave me alone." And Arnbjorn's just like, and he goes out and chases the swallow away and then sits out there all night to make sure it doesn't come back.
Oh my God.
And so that is where, and like the swallow was believed to have been Queen Gunnhild as a shapeshifter. And so like, I just have this beautiful mental image of Arnbjorn just going out and chasing her away with a broom and just being like, "Do not come back. Like Gunnhild, like knock it off."
Amazing.
And then later when Eyjol delivers his poem to Erik, it's very like generic, but it's also like a poem. And like me, Erik does not really understand poetry. So there's this great line we got from him that says like, "When the poem was over, the king said, 'That was well delivered.' And there's a little asterisk. And if you go to the back of the book and read the note on that line, it says, 'Most scholars agree that Erik had no idea what was actually said in the poem.'" And I was like, "That's my boy. That's him." So long story short, Eyjol gets to escape with his head. And Gunnhild's pissed about it. Like, she's furious. But he's gone. Like, he goes. But that, like, that little episode influenced so much of how I wrote these characters in this book. It just, like, he doesn't understand poetry.
That would 100% be me, too.
Yes,
I'd be like,
yes. That was
good
great.
Good job, yeah. I guess. I don't know.
Those sure were words in a particular order. Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah, I was going to ask about the like the shape-shifting and the ways that the witches do this kind of like traveling as animals. And I was going to ask if that was like from the sagas or if that was something you came up with.
So there are a lot of shapeshifters like in the sagas, and they always have human eyes. So like that's where I got that part from. But in terms of like, we don't really know how that works. They don't really give us an instruction guide or like, so I just kind of made it up based on the fact that we have found a lot of staffs, like the one that Gunnhild is holding on the cover. And we think that they were used for ritual purposes, although there is an joke in archaeology, like if you don't know what it is, ritual purpose. So the fact that it looks like a distaff that you would use for spinning, like, so from there, I was just kind of like, okay, spinning magic. There's a lot of like textile magic things happening like throughout like the Norse corpus of literature too. So I was like, okay, how can I combine that with like the shape-shifting aspect and the, you know, speaking with the dead aspect? And that's kind of where that came from. And it was piggybacking off the witch's heart, which, you know, has the same kind of thing where like she sinks down and learns this knowledge. But like the thing is, in the witch's heart, Angerboda and Freya like are both like I mean, they are a different sort of being. Like, they're not human, which is why they don't have the threads. They're kind of, their corporealness is kind of like questionable, right? So like so that's why, okay, how would this kind of magic work differently for humans? And so that's kind of how the magic system came to be in Weaver.
That's really cool.
Thanks.
That's really cool. I was chuckling because there's a line where Gunhild is spinning and she says something like, yeah, this usually like helps me clear my mind. I just need something to do with my hands. And I know that you're in a knitting group with my coworker, Elizabeth.
Yes, so yes, yes, like, yes.
That's Genevieve. Just
yes. Yep.
Need something to do with my hands.
Need to keep busy. Yep.
amazing. oh my gosh. I could literally gush about this book all day, as you can tell. But I will sort of start wrapping up. Is there something in particular that you hope readers will take from The Weaver and the Witch Queen when they read it?
So we kind of touched on this already, but like this whole idea that like there are relationships that no longer no matter how old they are, you know, our oldest friends sometimes, like there are times when you do need to walk away from situations that are unhealthy or, like you don't owe anybody anything. You don't owe anybody, your time and your energy. And that's something that comes up like many times in Weaver and is especially like poignant at the end, and how things work out in the end. Again, no spoilers. But like just this whole, actually, there was a review I was tagged in recently that really said it very, very well. And they said, the only forms of femininity that are bad are the ones that we don't choose for ourselves. Yeah, right?
Ooh,
and so I was just like, that is so good. That's so good. Because, you know, I didn't want to write a book about shield maidens. That I feel like that's been done a lot. And while I think it's amazing that women today are so empowered by this idea of women Viking warriors, there are other ways for women to have had agency in that time period. And I wanted to explore that through Odny and Gunhild. Gunhild being, you know, a sorceress, and Odny being just a regular person. And then there's Signy, who we barely get to see, but she's still so present. And she was the one who wanted to be not like other girls. She wanted to escape and well, you know, poor thing. I really hope that I get to continue her story as well, because she's been through a lot and she has some things to work out in her life. I really hope that I get to see her again.
That would be amazing. I am so invested in this
world. Thank you so much.
Deeply hoping for a sequel, because oh my god,
thank you.
I need so much more. And then the final question I'll leave you with is, have you read anything recently that you would like to recommend?
Yes. So I actually, I just got back from San Diego Comic-Con, which was an absolute dream. And there on the way there, I read Medusa's Sisters by Lauren J. Bear. And if you are one of those people who are like, I like Greek mythology retellings, but I'm kind of over them, do not sleep on Medusa's Sisters. Like if you are over Greek mythology retellings, like please don't. Just pick up this one, because it was so good. And it's one of those books where like, you know what's going to happen, you know, everybody knows what happens to Medusa, but it's like, so how do you make a story where we already know the ending compelling? I had the same question for myself in The Witch's Heart, because we know it ends in Ragnarok, right? So, but like, how do we get there? And when I tell you that, like, I could not put this book down, I literally like was mad when I had to like get up and do other, like, if I'm like, I'm on the plane and I'm like, I have to go to the bathroom, but I don't want to go to the bathroom because I don't want to stop reading this book, even for like 2 minutes. It was really, really good. And it does not, I will like warn people, because I like to warn people when I recommend any sort of book. It does not shy away from the brutality against women in the Greco Roman world, but the Greek world, because it takes place in, you know, ancient Greece or mythical Greece. But I really liked it a lot. It was a very compelling read, but also, again, brutal.
Awesome. I am absolutely going to go pick that up. Genevieve, oh my gosh, congratulations on The Weaver and the Witch Queen.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Oh, I really appreciate it.
And yeah, best of luck with your launch week and all of that.
Thank you.
I can't wait to recommend this to literally everyone.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for hanging out. And
of course.
I'll see you for the next book.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Huge thanks again to Genevieve Gornacek for joining me on the podcast. The Weaver and the Witch Queen is available now from Gibson's Bookstore. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and all of those links will be in the show notes, along with this episode's shoppable list, which you can also find at gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye!